Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Explore your graduate options today with the University of Southern California at online.usc.edu.
From KCRW, I'm Evan Kleiman, and you're listening to Good Food. As the world grows warmer and oceans rise, sustainability and the politics of consumption become increasingly critical. We start this episode by taking to the seas, examining how the seafood we eat and the choices we've made and continue to make factor into the big picture. First, we head to Australia, where bushfires and climate change are making headlines, and where a young chef is putting every part of the day's catch to use.
Why is it that we continue to wash a fish when it comes out of the water? It's a backwards system that shortens the shelf life dramatically, and it doesn't allow us to celebrate secondary species of fish. It doesn't allow us to work with the offal. We're only using 50%, and if you're a small business like I am, then 50% going in the bin just doesn't add up.
Josh Nyland is an Aussie wonderkind who has captured the attention of chefs everywhere with his fascinating approach to fish. He calls it fin to fin. Hi, Josh.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
I'm so happy to have you here. What you do, your new book called The Whole Fish Cookbook, is truly unique.
Yeah. It's a different approach.
A different approach. One of the most gobsmacking moments of going through this book is when you come to the picture of a fish completely broken down. So normally I think that would look like 4 to 6 pieces.
Sure.
And you, in yours, it's 31 pieces.
Yeah.
So I think let's start there, that you take, you don't have to go through every one, but when you're talking now about not wasting any part of the fish, you're talking about the cataracts of the eyes, the lenses of the eyes. You're talking about every part.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the only two things that go in the bin when I process a fish are the gills and the gallbladder. And those two are the ones that I see as being, you know, completely not delicious and too texturally challenging, but mainly they're just bitter and acidic and horrible, basically. But everything else from blood, stomach, liver, spleen, hearts, eyes, you know, fish sperm, roe, scales, heads, you know, you name it. It was done in that way to be very, you know, shocking, you know what I mean? I was doing it to represent a poster that I hope to see around the world in fish restaurants, fish mongers, because, you know, when you go into a butchery, then you see a cow on the wall or a pig on the wall and you can articulate the cuts. And I feel like we hadn't seen that yet for fish. So, yeah.
So aside from that, just usage of the whole fish, there's an exhaustive list of factors that you consider when you approach fish cookery. And could you take us through some of them and tell us why they're so critical for success?
I mean, to go right to the beginning of capture, you look at a fish in the water, and when you're trying to catch a fish, obviously the fish is trying to swim away. And so in doing so, it generates so much lactic acid in the actual fish muscle. Eventually the fish runs out of oxygen, it comes up. The best thing that you can do at that point to have a great outcome is to brain spike the fish as ikijime method, which is a Japanese method. By doing that and then cutting the gill and bleeding the fish from the gill, then putting it into a saltwater ice slurry to get to the temperature of the fish down. By doing all of that, you remove the lactic acid from the muscle of the fish. You take the blood out of the fish so it doesn't return to the muscle, and you end up with a fish, you know, that already has every chance of having a longer shelf life than it did. If that doesn't happen and you allow fish just to die and the temperature doesn't come down, what happens is the lactic acid sits in the muscle of the fish and it almost acts like reverse ceviche, in the sense that if you squeeze lime over the outside of a fish or any kind of acid, you watch it pretty much transform in front of your eyes and it goes milky and cooked. The same thing's happening where lactic acid is eating the muscle in the fish, and it's only when you take the fillet off that you actually see the damage, and you see a fish that already looks cooked. And if you put it into a fry pan and try and cook it, oftentimes you'll see it weeping out the muscle and it starts spitting everywhere. And that's a huge issue. The other big problem is this fascination that we have around washing a fish once it comes out of the water. By doing this, a fish is porous. It's got porous scales on the outside of it and it takes on water like a sponge. What meat butchery in the world have you ever walked into and seen them break down a cow and then take a strip loin off the carcass and then dip that in water in front of them or run it under a tap and then cut a steak from it, dip it under water again, and then put it on ice and try to serve it? It's not a consideration. I've never seen that in my life. If that was the case, maybe there would be something called beefy beef, because we continue to refer to fish as fishy fish.
Fishy fish.
And what that is organic compounds in the fish called trimethylamine oxide. That's once a fish dies. Once that trimethylamine oxide starts breaking down, it converts into ammonia. And ammonia is what fishy fish is. And the only way to offset ammonia is through using acidic ingredients. Hence why we've got a repertoire of cooking now that relies on acidic-based sauces and a gesture of half of lemon on a plate. So through good handling and great storage and the things that I'm talking about in the book, we can see a shelf life of a fish go from 4 days to up to 4 weeks at very least.
Can this happen at home where the refrigeration is quite different? The refrigerators are smaller and they're opened and closed many times.
Yeah, I mean, the tests that I've done so far suggest using the crisper of your fridge because it's kind of internalized to its own temperature, so to speak, and the opening and closing isn't as affected as much because it's its own box. The main issue, I feel, is the water, and to remove the water and still use standardized refrigeration, we'll see the storage potential go from 3 to 4 days up to 7 to 8. But there's still this thing in people's minds about if you go down to the market or you go to the shop and you get your fish, then you will always have that fish for dinner that night. There's no thinking that I'll buy my fish on Tuesday and we'll serve it on Saturday night.
No, that would kind of, I think people would be horrified to...
Correct. Serve old fish.
Right.
Whereas come to the restaurant and my old fish gets sold before my fresh fish, and there's a demand to eat fish guts and old fish as opposed to the fillets and the fresh ones.
Okay, so let's not call it old fish. Let's call
that's
it
right, just
aged,
to be funny.
Aged fish. And give us a sense of what happens to the fish.
Yeah.
So you're also not, it's not on ice.
Correct.
Is it in a perforated pan?
So to take you through, when a fish comes through the door at Fish Butchery, which is our retail space, we cut the scales off a fish instead of using a bear trap on a stick, which I like to call it, which, you know, is really aggressive. And when you cut the scale off, you cut the membrane off, which holds the scale. And that membrane has the potential of holding moisture. So we completely kind of remove moisture from the outside. We take the organs out. We separate everything down. Then we put the hook in the tail. We hang it in the cool room. We leave it on the bone. And then what we notice is over time, in this cold storage, which doesn't have any fan in there, it's just a temperature that sits around 0 degrees, we notice that the glutamates in the fish activate and make the fish more savory and more delicious.
So let's talk about cooking.
Yeah, please.
How can we incorporate some of the offal of the fish into dishes? Or are we incorporating them, or are we looking at them as separate products?
Depending on the significance of the sized fish that you're playing with, if you're looking at something like a John Dory or sometimes snappers as well, like those standard fish that we see so frequently in markets, you should be looking at them as singular items. Like John Dory, for me, like at times they can have a liver inside them that's 20% of the fish's weight, which is just extraordinary. And I mean, to cut that out, it's almost like looking at a large duck liver. It's incredible. And so when you have that in front of you, this is where the fish's meat conversation comes in. And if it's daunting to look at a fish's liver, anything that you can do to a duck liver, you can achieve with a fish liver. So we've made things like pâtés and things like that. But a great way of incorporating it into like a domestic setting would be to pan fry it by dusting it with a little bit of flour and then putting it on a piece of toast and just having liver on toast. It's absolutely delicious. And the quality points for fish organs are the same as the quality points for a great piece of fish. Use all your senses, smelling and touch and, you know, feel. You'll know if it's a good piece. The eyeballs of the fish seem to be, for me, the most confrontational place to begin when we kind of came up with it. You know, cultures all around the world have celebrated the whole fish for centuries. I'm not the first person to think about consuming everything rather than just the fillet, but I feel like the dishes that we know from those other cultures don't translate very well into a Western kind of palate, like it doesn't translate to the average American. So I set out to make a prawn cracker, but use eyeballs instead of the shellfish that would have gone into it.
So shrimp cracker, that puffy,
yeah,
that
puffy,
great puffy thing,
that's right,
that we love to eat.
The top three, the deep fried, crunchy, salty. And so you can win people over very quickly when you say those three things. And the same, like the fish sperm, the other extremely challenging, both texturally and also just creatively for me, it was like, it's so difficult because it's such a strange part of the fish. And so we ended up choosing to make a mortadella sausage with it. So by taking the idea of mortadella and then applying, you know, that part of the fish into it, we ended up having this great sausage. And what we did was we used the fish liver pate, the fish sperm mortadella, and then we put the two together and made a banh mi sandwich.
Amazing. I mean, the book is truly groundbreaking. And I can't wait to see how your ideas are going to populate their way through Los Angeles kitchens.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Oh, I'm sure it's going to happen. Well, thank you so much.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
That's Josh Nyland, chef owner of St. Peter, a fish restaurant in Sydney. The Whole Fish Cookbook approaches seafood through a sustainable lens. In a moment, we question to shrimp or not to shrimp.